Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hi. Thanks for being here. Hello. Thank you for your practice. Chapter 19. That's the one we're starting today. And now in this particular translation, it is titled, The Benefits Obtained by an Expounder of the Dharma. Notice it says benefits in this case, other cases merit. The word I want to focus in on is expounder. As you know, I've many times talked about how our practice of self-enlightenment, it changes our compositional energy, right? Everything fundamentally is energy. And so since everything is in motion, momentum, we exist in moments, discrete moments, right? Moment to moment to moment to moment, the cycle of birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. Or rebirth, death, rebirth, death, rebirth, death. I'm getting better at that. Anyway, since we're changing our energetic composition by enlightening our Buddha mind to be functioning always rather than sucked into the samsaric mindset that precipitates all our stress and anxiety, so on and so forth, then isn't it illogical to think, to understand that that energy isn't an isolated self, but a perceptive self because of the sentient mind that is part and parcel of the self, the cosmos, the universe, you and I. So if I practice self-enlightenment and awaken my Buddha-ness, how can I not affect you? Whether you know that or not, I am affecting you. Maybe it's in your mood. Maybe it's in your curiosity. Maybe it's in your tendency toward enlightenment of whatever your understanding is, right? So rather than saying these are the benefits obtained by a teacher of the Dharma, teacher in our modern Western mind, a teacher is somebody who's kind of authoritarian, right? Tells you what to think. This says expounder, well, that aspect is there. But expounder, to me, reads a little bit more about the energy. We expand our influence into others, not to push them into something, but rather inspire them to aspire to something greater. Right? And isn't that the description of a bodhisattva? So expounder, I like that word better than teacher. All right. Now, I've already said in the last chapter, there was some return to the rhetoric of the Avatamsaka, the first sermon, right? In its picture painting and personages of the augmented realities of the Buddha, the Buddha-ness that we all experience. What can you expect? And we've already talked about this, right? The merits, Maitreya was asking about it, what are the merits of attainment, of achieving this practice at the level of the Lotus Sutra, at expounding the Dharma? In this chapter, it's translated benefit. Benefit, merit, merit, benefit. So Shakyamuni is going to go into it a little deeper here, but he's going to start using these flowery terms again because he wants to indicate the preciousness of these things. He's not going to say, well, your sense of taste is better. And well, okay. Right? He's going to say, oh, you don't understand. The way your tongue is made is altered. The way the energies that come together to make taste buds extend their range fully come to fruition, clever pun, right, through this practice. He's going to get into it. Not as deeply as the Avatamsaka, but you're going to see, if you've read it, flavorings in here. Another pun, sorry. Thereupon, the Buddha addressed Bodhisattva Mahasattva Satata Samita Biyukta. For those who don't speak Sanskrit. Sounds like a grocery club. Anyway, that's Bodhisattva ever persevering. What else is he translated as? Bodhisattva assiduous practice, or I've heard several names for him. If sons or daughters of a virtuous family preserve this Lotus Sutra, recite, explain, and copy it, they will attain 800 qualities of the eye. Now, the Lankavata or the Avatamsaka, he'd list all of them and give them names, right? So, 800 qualities of the eye, 1,200 qualities of the ear, 800 qualities of the nose, 1,200 qualities of the tongue, 800 qualities of the body, and 1,200 qualities of the mind, which is the most relevant to us, yeah? So really, and if you've been paying attention, there's a clarity and purification happening here, and he's including the skandhas, the first five consciousnesses, right? Sight, hearing, taste, feeling, so on. But he's going beyond the five. I think, yeah, the sixth is the mind in the consciousnesses. Actually, the sixth and seventh, they're just different interpretations. You can look that up in the Buddhism reference or anywhere on this channel. These qualities will adorn the six sense faculty, purifying them all. Though the natural bodily eyes given them by their parents, which are thus purified, those sons and daughters of a virtuous family will see the mountains, forests, rivers, and oceans both within and beyond the great manifold cosmos. All the way from the lowest hell up as far as the highest summit of the universe. I'll call your attention there to the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. They will also see all the sentient beings there, perceive and know the causes and consequences of their deeds and of their states of birth. States of birth, right? Cycle. Birth, death, birth, death, birth, death. Where are you in this moment? How far or near are you to Buddha-ness? Then the Buddha, wanting to elaborate upon the meaning of this further, spoke these verses. Listen to the qualities of those in the great assembly who can fearlessly teach this Myoho Renge Kyo. Such people will attain the 800 qualities of the excellent eye. Adorned with these qualities, their eyes are extremely pure. With the eyes given by their parents, in other words, the physical eye, they see both all the manifold cosmos within and beyond Mount Meru, Sumeru, up to Mount Kakravara, and many other mountains, forests, oceans, rivers, and streams, down to the lowest hell, and up to the summit of the universe. There they see all the sentient beings, although they have not yet attained the divine eyes. Their power of sight will be like this. The divine eyes being the Buddha eye, right? Which ultimately is something we can only experience in samsara with our sentient minds. Furthermore, O Bodhisattva ever persevering, If sons or daughters of a virtuous family preserve, recite, explain, or copy this sutra, they will attain the 1200 qualities of the ear. Through their pure ears, they will hear both within and beyond the great manifold cosmos, down as far as the lowest hell and up as high as the summit of the universe. They will hear all kinds of voices and sounds, such as the sound of elephants, the neighing of horses, the sound of cows and carts, cries, weeping, the sounds of conches and drums, gongs and bells, laughter, talking, male and female voices, the voices of boys and girls, righteous and unrighteous voices, the sounds of suffering and happiness, the voices of common and holy people, people on the path, pleasant and unpleasant sounds, the voices of devas, nagas, yakshas, gandharvas, asuras, garudas, kimnaras, mahoragas, the sound of fire, water, wind, beings in the hells, animals, hungry ghosts, monks, nuns, shravakas, pratyagabuddhas, bodhisattvas, and buddhas. It's a noisy ear. In short, although they do not have the divine faculty of hearing, they will always hear and know everything, both within and beyond the great manifold cosmos, through the purified natural bodily ears given by their parents. They distinguish all these various sounds, and yet their faculty of hearing remains unharmed. Thereupon, the Buddha, wanting to elaborate on the meaning of this, further spoke in verses. Let me say one thing before I get into the verses. He talks about the divine faculty, and he talks about, where was it? Seeing into, where is it? Anyway, beyond the cosmos, right? It's a reference to time again. And I keep calling your attention to this because Buddhism is all about the momentum of life, right? The quiescent energy forming into form. That is the nexus of our engagement, the formations. Being aware of this constant moment to moment to moment to moment to moment, living, happening, being is the nexus of our enlightenment, right? This is how we detach from the form end of the equation, the whole thing being karma. Okay? What was the other thing I wanted to say? So seeing into beyond the cosmos is really about the future. Seeing where the momentum is headed, which is our nexus again of influence. Do you hear people talk about changing karma? That's the nexus. The karma is going with whatever tendencies and conditions it has. But our conscious agency allows it to us to influence that momentum, change its, alter its direction, influence it with every daimoku, yes? The ear given by the parents, the physical ears. And again, that's something I wanted, the other thing I wanted to point out, the divine ear. The divine ear is the potential hearing consciousness that we read about in the Nidana, right? The things, the energies that motivate the creation of the physical ear in order to perceive the sounds of the cosmos is our samsaric ear. From our parents, as he says it, or as it's translated. But the divine ear hears without having to construct the physical ear. Don't let it confuse you. It's just that's the distinguishing. The energies that form are more than the cosmos that's created from it. Yes? the impetus, if you will, the formations. The ear given by the parents is pure and spotless. It's a wonderful expression of that karma. With this natural ear, physical ear, they hear the sounds of the manifold cosmos. They hear the sounds of elephants, horse carts, cows, the sound of gongs, bells, conches, drums, and vinyas, the sound of harps, bamboo pipes, and flutes, pure and pleasing songs, and even though they hear these, they are not attached to them. They don't draw you in. You just pleasure in their being, happening. See the different, the it's a, like a dividing line between samsara and awakening, Buddha-ness. They hear innumerable kinds of human voices, and yet they are able to discriminate them. Furthermore, they hear divine sounds, subtle melodies, male and female voices, the sounds of boys and girls. They also hear the cries of the Kalavinka and Kajivaka birds in the mountains, around the rivers, or in deep valleys. They hear as well various sounds of pain and suffering from the hells, and sounds of hungry ghosts, who suffering from hunger and thirst are in search for food and drink. And when the Asuras living along the ocean speak to each other and utter great cries, such expounders of the Dharma living here hear all of these various voices from afar, and yet their faculty of hearing is unharmed. Those expounders of the Dharma hear all birds and animals in the 10 directions calling to each other. The expounders of the Dharma dwelling here also hear the voices of the Abhasvara, and Subhaskritsna, that's a tough one, heavens above the Brahma world, all the way up to the summit of the universe. The expounders of the Dharma dwelling here hear all of the monks and nuns either reciting the sutra or explaining it to others. They also hear such voices as those of the Bodhisattva reciting the sutra, teaching it to others, compiling the collections, and explaining their meaning to others. Those who preserve this Lotus Sutra, this Myoho Renge Kyo, will all hear the Buddhas, the great seers, teaching the subtle Dharma to the great assembly and leading and inspiring sentient beings. They will hear all the sounds, both within and beyond the manifold cosmos, down to the lowest hell and up to the summit of the universe, and yet their faculty of hearing remains unharmed. Because their faculty of hearing is keen, they are able to discriminate these sounds. Although those who preserve this Lotus Sutra have not yet attained the divine faculty of hearing, they can simply use the ears given by their parents. Their qualities are exactly like this. So this is the transmigration kind of thinking, right? The transcendent powers, transcending samsara to something far more enlightened. Furthermore, O Bodhisattva, perseverance. If sons or daughters of a good family preserve this sutra, recite, explain, or copy it, they will perfect the 800 qualities of the nose. Yep, we're going to go through it again. With this pure faculty of the nose, they will smell all kinds of fragrances, both within and beyond the great manifold cosmos, such as the fragrance of sumanas, jati, malika, kampaka, patala flowers, and red, blue, and white lotus flowers, the scent of blossoming, fruit-bearing trees like sandalwood, aloes wood, and tagara wood, the aroma of the leaves of the tamala tree, thousands of myriads of sorts of fragrances of blended incense, either powered powdered, sorry, shaped into balls or made into scented ointments. Those who preserve this sutra will be able to distinguish all of these fragrances while remaining in a single place. They will be able to distinguish the scents of sentient beings, such as elephants, horses, cows, sheep, men and women, boys and girls, grasses, trees, and shrubs of any kind of odor, either nearby or at a distance. They will also be able to unerringly distinguish all kinds of scents. Yeah, I didn't miss it. You heard right. He's talking about sentient beings such as, and he's listing not only elephants and horses, cows and sheep, which you can say, okay, yeah, they perceive, they have some consciousness, yes. But he's also including trees, shrubs, and grasses. And we'll talk about that, the enlightenment of, well, we would consider non-sentient beings, right? And we say that in modern parlance, right? Sentient and non-sentient beings. But Shakyamuni considers everything sentient. Why do you think he does that? Because he sees the world, the cosmos, only in moment-to-moment instantiation. And the very fact that everything is in motion, constantly changing moment-to-moment, implies a knowing, an experience. Now, can a piece blade of grass dissect that experience and influence it? Very, very, very primitively, it ain't no human, right? But still, its functions, right? It takes sunlight and converts it to energy for its growth. There is some, right, actions being taken by the grass that promote its growth. So strictly speaking, or more generally speaking, it may be a very, very simplistic form, but a form nonetheless, yeah? So let's go on. Those who preserve this sutra, although they dwell here, can smell all kinds of divine fragrances in the heavens, such as the fragrance of Parasitraka, and Kovidara trees, Mandarava, Great Mandarava, Manjusaka, and Great Manjusaka flowers, or the fragrance of sandalwood and aloeswood powder and various kinds of powdered and blended incense. Among these divine fragrances, there is not one whose scent they cannot distinguish. They can smell the fragrance of the bodies of all the devas. They can also smell from afar the fragrance that is emitted when Shakra, the king of the devas, is dwelling in his excellent palace, when he is enjoying the desires of the five senses, or the fragrance that is emitted when he is in the Sudharma hall, teaching the Dharma to the 33 devas, or the fragrance that is emitted when he plays in the garden, or the fragrance of the bodies of all the other male and female devas. We might call them spirits, but not spiritual, nothing mystical. But just as I sense when you enter the room, I or anyone, a lover, a parent, a sister, a brother, people that you know, you sense them. And the sense of smell is very, very powerful, right? It affects our memory in samsara, yes? A slight smell of something can take you all through time with associations, yes? That's our database thing. In this way, their faculty of smell reaches up to the Brahma world and to the highest summit of the universe, wherein they can smell the bodies of the devas and incense the devas burn. They can also smell from afar the fragrance of the Sravakas, Pratyekabuddhas, Bodhisattvas, and Buddhas, and know where they are. Although they can smell all these fragrances, their faculty of smell will not be harmed or misled. And if they want to discriminate and explain these different fragrances to others, they remember them without error. At that time, Buddha, wanting to elaborate on the meaning of this further spoken verse. Now, you may be, as I am, itching to explain to you, to talk about what is the Brahma world, Volume 2, Buddhism Reference. It's coming. I've already started making videos on each term that has been added, and there's already 100 pages of terms. So, I have a few, and they're coming. Even Dharani, which I'm sure everyone is wondering about, it is our Daimoku after all. All of that will be explained. They're deeper Buddhist study terms than are in Volume 1, although there's some profound ones in Volume 1, but they're more directed to a modern practice. This Volume 2 is going to have more in-depth of historical terms that keep popping up, especially in this BDK Tripitaka edition of the Lotus Sutra, right? Tripitaka being mainly, if not all, Pali texts, yeah? In fact, there's some evidence, I was just researching again, when we get to the Dharani, of translations, or even not translations, but transliterations, so they're just sounds. Is it the other way around? Transcribed into English. What's the word I'm looking for? The phonetics, the... in English, anyway, it'll come to me. I have a whole list of Dharani here. Yeah, I've got 4 pages of translations of Dharani. What do they call it here? From Prakrit, which is the language it is said that Shakyamuni actually taught in, because it was a more universal, you know, India still has over 125 national languages. Can you imagine? I mean, we talk about English in the United States like it's, well, American English as opposed to British English. But could you imagine if every state has its own, not version of English, but an entirely different language? So the people from Mississippi can't talk to the people in Los Angeles unless they have some common third language that they can interpolate to their languages. That's the nature of Prakrit. It's the everyday man's language, yeah? Man or woman. Okay, so here we go. Their faculty of smell is pure. Again, these are people who expound the Dharma, you and I, yeah? They can smell and discriminate all kinds of good or bad odors in this world, such as sumanas and jati flowers, tamala leaves, sandalwood, aloes wood, and tagara trees, and various fruits and flowers. And they also know the fragrance of sentient beings, men and women. So he's extending, yes, you smell all these things, but do you smell all of them profoundly? Again, this is reference back to the Avatamsaka, but he's not going into that much detail. The Dharma teachers, although dwelling afar, know where these fragrances come from. They smell the scents of noble emperors of great dignity, the lesser rulers and their children, subjects in attendance, and know where they are. That's quite something. That reminds me of the scent of a dog. It has something like 200 million more scent receptors than we do. So a dog walks outside and he knows everything that's gone on in the last few days, yeah? That's why a dog can track things. They've got an incredible sense of smell. I can't even imagine, right? But this is kind of what Shakyamuni is saying here. When you're a teacher of the Dharma, your senses become so alive, so aware, that they extend beyond their normal use. You follow? They can smell the fragrance of rare jewels. There's one. They wear their underground treasuries and the noble emperor's bejeweled queens and also know where they are. They can also smell the ornaments, garments, and necklaces with which people adorn themselves and fragrances they anoint themselves with and know who wears them. Those who preserve this Lotus Sutra can smell the fragrance of the devas and tell whether they are walking, sitting, playing, or transforming themselves. Although they dwell here, those who preserve this sutra know the location of the fragrances of various flowers, fruits, and oils in detail. They can smell the scent of sentient beings, either deep in dangerous mountains or where the sandalwood flowers are in bloom, and know where they are. Those who preserve this sutra can smell the scents of sentient beings, either on Mount Kakravada, in the ocean, or underground, and know exactly where they are. They can also smell the scents of the male and female asuras and their attendants, and they can discriminate them when they are fighting or when at play. Influences. They can also smell the odors of lions. I should hope so. Distinguishing a lion from a tiger, though, that would be pretty amazing, right? Elephants, tigers, there's the tigers, wolves, buffaloes, and water buffaloes dwelling in dangerous, precipitous places in the wilderness and know where they are. They can smell and discriminate exactly the scent of a pregnant woman and determine whether the embryo will be male or female. Whew, now that's a sense of smell, right? Without sex organs or non-human. Through this power of smell, they know the first instance if a woman is pregnant and whether or not it will be carried to full term and if she will give birth easily and to a happy child. Now, this is some extensive reaching beyond the normal samsaric self. And I think this example of the nose probably brings that home more than any of the others so far. But this is the whole point, is that when you awaken your Buddha mind, your awareness becomes so extensive because it's not belabored by maintaining the database warehouse of identification. It's just, it's experiencing the now. And therefore, there are no obstacles, no obfuscations, yeah? Through this power of the faculty of smell, they know what men and women are thinking through smell. You know, they say dogs can tell if you have cancer or certain diseases. Well, there it is. There's an example, right? This isn't magical. Their desires, delusions, and anger, or whether they cultivate goodness. They can also smell gold, silver, and various rare treasures hidden underground, and as well as the contents of copper vessels, and completely distinguish them. They can smell various necklaces and know whether they are valuable or not, even when the prices are undetermined, where they come from and where they are now. They can smell and know all about divine flowers such as the Mandarava and the Manjushaka flowers and Parijata trees. They can also smell and discriminate the differences between superior, mediocre, and inferior fragrances. Where are we time-wise? Okay. Of sky-born palaces adorned with various jeweled flowers, they can also smell and know exactly about those who take pleasure in the heavenly gardens, excellent palaces, towers and dharma halls. Moreover, they can smell and know exactly whether the devas are listening to the dharma, are enjoying the desires of the skandhas, the five senses, or whether they are coming, going, walking, sitting, or lying. They can also smell and know every detail of the garments worn by the heavenly maidens, given off the fragrance of the beautiful flowers, and where those maidens ramble in their play. In this way, their power of smell reaches all the way up to the Brahma world. They can smell and know exactly the devas entering the meditation and emerging from meditation. They can also smell all the way from the Abhasavara and Subhakrsna heavens up to the highest summit of the universe, and know exactly who has been born there for the first time and who has emerged. Those who preserve this sutra can smell the monks and know exactly where they are, if they are constantly persevering toward the Dharma. If they are either sitting or walking, reciting this sutra, or if they are diligently meditating under forest trees, they can also smell and know exactly if a bodhisattva is firm in intention, meditating or reciting the sutra, or teaching the Dharma to others. They can also smell and know exactly if the Buddha is being honored by all, and if he is teaching the Dharma out of his compassion for sentient beings. Moreover, they can smell and know exactly if the sentient beings in the presence of the Buddha are joyfully listening to the sutra and are practicing according to the Dharma. Those who preserve this sutra will attain a faculty of smell such as this, even before the bodhisattva's faculty of smell that is attained from the incorruptible Dharma. And now he's going to go... Next is the tongue. But we'll save that for the next installment here. But I think you're getting the impression. This chapter is about the personal experience of awakening, enlightenment. And that is a kind of profound awareness that is attained through the experience of each moment of the cosmos, your cosmos, my cosmos, our cosmos, happening moment to moment, and therefore we can see, smell, hear, right? Totality. So there's a sort of a surety, a certainty, a confidence, a knowing of one's being, right? Living in, with, through. This is something only a human sentient mind can conceive, experience. That's the Dharma. Make sense? I hope so. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Don't forget, like and subscribe. It takes a few seconds, and it helps to promote this resource. It's part of propagation, your bodhisattva effort. If you can do more to support this effort, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much. From simply getting a proper mandala or an ebook to patrons on Patreon and through PayPal, you guys are... immeasurable gratitude from all of us, but certainly from me, because that's what enables me to keep these computers running, keep the internet on, keep this channel growing, right? And adding materials to the website, lots of free stuff, the podcast. My annual payment is happening at the end of this month. There's got to be money in the coffers to keep this going, right? So those of you who can do that, you're deeply, deeply appreciated. Thank you. The imperative for all of us, keep your practice strong. Be kind. Take care of your health. I will see you in the next one. All right? With that, where's my, there it is. Bye for now.